a question or comment? Need savvy travel advice? Connect with Robert, Mary, and Rudy anytime on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at RM World Travel. Now, back to RM World Travel.
Thanks for staying with us through the breaks. Nice to have you tuned in to our Robert, Mary World Travel get-together. Before we reconnect with Richard Abulafian to get his thoughts on a few things happening in the airline sector of the travel world, if you're thinking about taking an ocean cruise, Holland America wants to help you write the next great chapter in your life by ensuring you savor the journey.
They do. They promise a story that will appeal to your sense of wonder, a story where the exotic becomes the familiar, smiles speak a thousand languages, and your experiences will be filled with unforgettable moments.
To learn more and find specials, contact your travel professional or visit hollandamerica.com. There's also a link at rmworldtravel.com under sponsors.
Holding on the line is show friend Richard Abulafia, the Vice President of Analysis with the Teal Group, where he manages projects in the commercial and military aircraft field. And simply put, when we want the facts and a straight scoop on all things aviation, he's one of our go-to guys who has the answers.
Hey, Richard, nice to reconnect with you today. How are things in your slice of the travel world?
Oh, just wonderful. Onward and upward.
Excellent. We like to hear that. So, all right, listen, there's a lot that we want to cover with you today. But first, can you give us any update on how things are progressing with the Boeing Embraer acquisition? It's been a little quiet on that front, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it sure has. And, you know, Brazil's a great country, some great people, and their political economy makes everyone else look good somehow. And, you know, sure enough, I think it's become a very sensitive issue. Because originally this was, a key project by the Brazilian government. It's hugely important to national pride and perceived national security. And even though I would regard it as essential for the company's growth moving forward, there are a lot of people who think that it should be kept in Brazilian ownership.
Mm-hmm. And I know they have an election coming, too, so I'm sure that that's playing a little bit into what's going on as well.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. As a matter of fact, one of the leading candidates is now in the hospital with stab wounds, which tells you pretty much all you need to know about that political economy problem.
Wow.
Just a bit.
Just a little
bit of a big problem, yeah. All right, so I would like to talk to you, or have you talk to us, about this shiny new Airbus A220 that I saw some coverage on, literally rolling out of a paint shop in Quebec with the Delta Airlines paint scheme on it. Fun fact, they used 200 rolls of masking tape.
Yeah, I saw it. Was
and 165 gallons. I don't think I'd want that job. But I'd like to know your take on this. Is this jet still on target to begin flying? Is it in the winter? Is it in 2019? And what's the buzz that you're hearing? It is the former Bombardier C-Series jet, correct?
Yeah, it is exactly the same. And okay. As a result, it has been flying in European service and is on track to enter the U.S. market as well. I think it's very promising. And if you're a supplier, perhaps a bit of a threat. Because if you were a supplier, you always got pricing relief from dealing with smaller people. In other words, you dealt with Airbus and Boeing. They crunched the heck out of you on terms, payments, and conditions. Then you went to Bombardier. Not much they could do, so you charged them more. And now they're dealing with Airbus. So from a supplier standpoint, it kind of hurts. But from a traveling public standpoint, it's good news. I mean, this could be the most efficient 110 to 130-seat jet family ever, which, of course, allows more city pairs, more point-to-point flying, always good for those of us who don't absolutely love changing planes in Atlanta.
Well, which exactly. I think we all love, but we are going to be crammed into smaller tubes, that's for sure.
Well, yes, but actually it's a very comfortable tube inside. You know, it's 3-2 seating, single aisle, of course. And, it's so much more than just a regional jet. So it's all quite relative. And if you do the math, you assume, say, 80% load factors, the odds are excellent that you've either got an empty seat next to you or a window or an aisle.
Well, when you put it that way, I'll accept that. We'll see, and we're just interested to see how it fares out there, but I think with the alliance with Airbus is going to make a difference. All right, so on a different subject, earlier this week I saw a report that American Airlines is partnering with Zoe's Kitchen. That's a Mediterranean-inspired restaurant chain that's around the country now, and they're going to be creating onboard menu items for economy passengers. You know, there seems to be this renewed focus on in-flight meals aboard airlines, Richard. I know Alaska Air, they've revamped their menu over the summer. United's made some enhancements. And on Monday, Delta Airlines, they're going to debut a revamped in-flight menu with items for purchase on flights in North America, I think of 1,400 miles or more. So I really wonder, what are your thoughts on these in-flight meal investments going on by the airlines after all the years of neglect?
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity. For pretty much everybody involved, I think everyone has learned to live without an in-flight meal there in the back of the plane, which is most of us. And it used to be something available for purchase, but you didn't exactly look forward to it. But in an age of fast casual dining, you know, the Zoe's Kitchen, the Cava Mezes, the whatever else out there, it's a tremendous opportunity for convenient, tasty meals that they can use to enhance ancillary revenue, which, of course, as you know, is kind of the name of the game in the airline business these days. Anything you can do to attract a little extra cash out of the people in the back of the plane.
Well, that's but the airlines, they're on target for what? Isn't this going to be like the ninth consecutive year of profits, I think, they're on target for?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a big factor in that, absolutely. And, of course, as you know, ancillary revenue is generally taxed or burdened with fees at a completely different rate.
Yeah. that's another good point. Yes, it is.
Richard, I'd love to talk to you about low-cost European carriers, because I feel like we've talked about this on the show a lot over the past few years with, you know, adding flights to for U.S. travelers. And then this week, we've got Norwegian Air announcing their scaling back service that they actually added not that long ago, eliminating routes from New York, Stewart in Providence, Edinburgh, Scotland, Belfast, Northern Ireland. So, and there's chatter about the overall long-term stability of Norwegian Air. What do you think about these low-cost carriers? Can they continue to thrive? Are they thriving between the U.S. and Europe? Or are the legacy carriers making it too difficult?
Yeah, it's tricky stuff because, you know, back in both mainland Europe and, of course, continental U.S., low-cost carriers have set the tone for the domestic travel market. Now, 30-40% plus a lot of other people have their pricing influence. But the real question is, can they expand international routes and fits and starts in Asia? You've got AirAsia X. But so far, it's really kind of early days in the transatlantic market. People are experimenting with what works and what doesn't. And Norwegian, of course, has issues with how much cash they have available to experiment.
Right.
So they have to get it right. If it doesn't work out quickly, they withdraw from routes. That's just, you know, something they have
well,
to do.
Well, in Norwegian,
they're not making money.
They've expanded pretty rapidly. I know earlier in the summer we reported on it. You know, British Airways, their parent company, IAG, they were making some overtures looking into the company, and I kind of have to wonder, are they just waiting for it to wither on the vine a little bit before they step in and make, you know, make a formal offer to take that company over?
Yeah, I think that's actually a pretty good assumption. You know, you look at the one successful or the few successful models of low cost, it's usually a second label of somebody else, in Air Canada Rouge, for example, where you are taking advantage of low fares to stimulate the market, but you're also allowing for the critical mass that you associate with a big legacy carrier. So an acquisition would certainly fit into that pattern.
All right, so we're going to switch it up again because we've got, when I said we had a lot to cover, I wasn't kidding. You know, when it comes to our government in Washington, where you are, it's always tough to say with certainty what's going to happen. But right now, there is activity that's underway in Congress on cracking down on unreasonable airline fees. Matter of fact, American Airlines CEO Doug Parker, he's threatened to prohibit customers from making changes to non-refundable tickets if Congress moves ahead on this. That'd be a major shift for travelers to deal with. What are your thoughts on this becoming viable?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to think it's the sort of thing that people put forth as a good idea, something to show the voters back home, whatever else, but it gets watered down, you know, inevitably by the rulemaking committees, by lobbyists, whatever else, and, of course, by posturing by executives. In other words, I don't think you're going to see anything that really changes the calculation here.
Yeah, and I saw, you know, just on the changing of those fees, and we go back to those ancillary fees you were talking about. I mean, American alone last year, they made like, you know, they made almost like $900 million. And I think the carriers out there, it was almost like $3 billion or so that was collected on all of these different change fees and ancillary fees. So it's big business. You know why they want to protect it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, of course, you've got the problem of whose definition of unreasonable are we going to use? You know, it quickly gets into the question of, you know, as long as you're transparent, should the government actually be doing something about it? You know, I mean, it's the same issue with seat pitches. You know, what is appropriate, what is safe, what is whatever. Most people at the end of the day don't care that much. They still click on the lowest fare when they go to the web. Is there really scope for government to get involved? Well, I would argue as long as everyone's being transparent about these fees and whatever else, I'm not so sure it would have any traction to do that.
Well, there's a lot going on out there. We really appreciate the time that you take to spend with Mary and me. It's always good information, and it was great to reconnect with you today. So really appreciate it. You have yourself a great weekend, and enjoy your travels. Okay, Richard?
You do the same. Great talking with you both.
Thank you. Take care.
Well, Mary, there goes Richard, and that's why he's our go-to guy. We still have so many other things I wanted to talk to him about, but unfortunately, we have another guest holding, and it is what it is. So, folks, on that note right now, I'm going to just say to you a reminder to please connect with us on Facebook. You can do it on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. We got it all covered. It's all at RM World Travel. You can also link to it from our website at rmworldtravel.com. We're going to take a quick break, as I just said, for a few commercial messages from our sponsors, but there's still so much more RM World Travel to come. Stay with us.
To join Robert, Mary, and Rudy, call 800-387-8025 or follow us on Facebook and Twitter at RM World Travel. We're coming right back.